Hey, it is really good to be back here, and we're going to try and do a bit of fun, but also just a serious talk about when the honeymoon is over. That's what we're going to be talking about. So first of all, we're going to play a little game, guessing that most of you may be married. So if you are married, could you please stand up? If you're married, you've got to stand up. We're going to talk about honeymoons. Okay, here's the first question. Now, when you hear the question, you get to sit down if your answer is no. All right? You stay up if your answer is yes. Okay, so first question or first comment is, our honeymoon photos, is that right? Are in a book or on a disc or at least ordered in some fashion. Our honeymoon photos. So stay standing if your honeymoon photos are ordered.
In other words, if they're in the bottom of the drawer somewhere, you sit down.
Oh, fair few sitter downers. Honeymoon photos are still in a box somewhere.
Yeah, that's telling.
If they're not ordered, if they're just scattered somewhere or you've never bothered putting them in order or you've never labelled them or whatever, then you're out of the game. You're down.
If they're in a box, sit down.
Yeah. Okay, we have the ordered honeymoon people standing up. Here we go with question two. Okay, this one might be a bit harder. If you stay standing... If you have revisited your honeymoon destination, you stay. Getting it down now. That doesn't have to be the actual room, it can just be the area. So those who stand have revisited. Okay, well done.
Yes.
Okay, here's the third one. All these honeymoon experts. Here's the third question. We, those who are still standing, have gone on a second or a third honeymoon. That is, no kids, somewhere special, you've gone on a second or third honeymoon. Whoa, give them a round of applause.
Oh, yeah. Stay standing.
The game's not over.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't finished yet.
All righty. Now, those of you who are still standing, your tables are still in the game because they're still with you. They're your friends. You need to now whisper to them because the next question you have to get right is, what is the top overseas honeymoon destination for Australian couples? Do you think they can talk? Ask your friends. What do you think is the top overseas honeymoon destination?
The rest of you tables that are actually losers already, you can try to work it out as well. Yeah.
Okay, that's long enough. Now. Okay.
You come to a decision? Yep.
All right. If your answer starts with any other letter than T, sit down. Oh, we have a winner. Okay, we might have three. What was your answer? Thailand, the winners, give them a clap.
Yes.
Scotty, you can go and give them one magazine to the winners.
Yes.
Holidays, honeymoons for couples. And who was the other winner over here? They're old magazines, but they're just as good. Are you saying you've already got it? No. Yeah, there's no coupon in there. That's very exciting. Now, does anyone, just for sake of the age group and everything, know the top honeymoon destination for the generation above me? It wasn't Thailand.
Oi, oi.
Woy woy, about right.
Dapto.
Yeah, my parents, so the 80-year-olds. No. Blue Mountains.
The Blue Mountains.
Oh, the Hydro Majestic.
The Hydro Majestic.
It was it. Okay, now I have one more question for your table to talk. Just for interest's sake. Talk about if any of you knows the origin of the word honeymoon. Have a little chat. Do you know where it came from?
Not the actual tradition of, but the actual name of the word.
Okay, anybody think they know? Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Hang on.
It has to do with a Viking custom where they actually drink, once they get married, honey mead for 1 month, which is one moon. Honey moon.
Woo!
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. The only thing that we had from our research was that it first originated in Babylon, not the Vikings. They said it was over 4,000 years ago, but you got it right. So honey mead was a beer. And so the couples were given enough beer to be able to last for the whole lunar month, the moon. So they got the honey moon. So isn't that the guy's ideal time for a honeymoon? You get beer for a month.
And interestingly, the earliest English reference was in about 1500, so there was a lot happening before it was written down in the English dictionary. But it also was a custom in biblical times in a different sort of way. So we found a passage in Deuteronomy that says the honeymoon should last more than a month, which sounds good to me.
And it says, it's in Deuteronomy 24:5, and it says, if a man has recently married, he must not be sent to war or have any other duty laid on him. For 1 year he is to be free to stay at home and bring happiness to the wife he has married. Now, that all sounds really attractive, but I want to know what guy is actually willing to commit to bring happiness to the wife he's married for a full year.
He commits to do it for his whole life, I believe, in the wedding vows, yeah.
That's a big call.
But anyway, we'll get on to our talk. However long we think a honeymoon should go, a month or a year or a week, we do think positively about the word honeymoon. We see the couples go off the streamers or the cans, you know, off after the wedding, and we expect that it's going to be a really happy, positive time for them. Now, we have heard of some disastrous honeymoons, and I'm sure you have too, and maybe your own was a bit disastrous, but the most disastrous one I heard of was a couple who decided to go to Fiji in January. Big mistake.
Anybody know why that's a big mistake to go to Fiji? Not only rain season, it's like monsoon.
But the worst of it was they actually turned up at Sydney Airport on the night after the wedding, the day wedding, and the plane was cancelled. So their very first night of marriage was in an airport. Then they travelled. You're trying to do something?
Yeah, you keep going.
Okay. Then they travelled over to Fiji, got to Fiji, hit the monsoon. They couldn't get out of the Fiji airport, so they spent the second night in a Fiji airport.
We're
told the resort has been wiped out, so hopped a plane back to Sydney. Isn't that disastrous? So not all honeymoons are positive, but we do have those positive thoughts. This is going to be our honeymoon stage, and we go to the altar feeling really happy about getting married. I mean, there's very few people who will go to the altar going, you know, look, I hate you.
And I hate you.
So why don't we get married, you know? That's just not the way it happens. We start really positively, don't we? But we do hear the words, when the honeymoon is over. Oh, the honeymoon's over. And our thoughts, you know, sometimes turn... Well, what's that mean? Sometimes our thoughts turn to, like, politics. The honeymoon's over, meaning, you know, as we've said, Tony Abbott's honeymoon is over before it even began sometimes. It's not always a really positive thing. But before we get into the serious part of that, I'd like you at your table to think of what you could add to this sentence. The honeymoon is over when? What are some of the things that you think indicate the honeymoon's over in a marriage? Have a quick chat there and we'll get back to you with a few. All right, let's gather a few of those thoughts together. I heard quite a bit of laughter from that table. You got anything to say? The honeymoon's over when?
When the bill came in.
When the bill came in.
When the bill came in. Oh, that's a good one.
I like that. Give that one a round of applause. That's great.
When the bill came in.
Did anyone else have one? The honeymoon's over when?
Reality sets in.
Life, yeah. Sorry? When you have children. Nine months of morning sickness. Oh, yeah. And when you stop talking, so we're getting some serious things in there, that's true, when you stop talking. The honeymoon seems to be over for different people at different stages, but here's a few that came off the internet. The honeymoon is over when you stop texting him every second of the day. That's a new one.
This is clearly modern stuff. New people.
Or the honeymoon is over. The honeymoon is over when he buys you a vacuum cleaner for your birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, listen to this one. That's happened. And maybe you've heard this one before, but it's very true. The honeymoon is over when language between you changes. So it changes.
Well, like, you know, I've heard it said that you've really lost it when it goes from, can you pass the honey, honey, can you pass the sugar, sugar, to can you pass the tea bag?
There's a groan on that one. So what is happening to a honeymoon couple, or even a pre-honeymoon couple, is that they're going through a stage we like to call a blending nesting stage. It's sort of a merging stage of a relationship. So it happened to us. It doesn't happen to everyone. I've talked to quite a few couples who, say, met in high school and then got married, and they progressively got closer and closer. So they've told me they didn't feel that huge, you know, blending, nesting, passion sort of stage. But some of us do, and a lot of us do, and we certainly did. We had a little bit of a blending, nesting stage happen there when we first met. Even though he did have long hair, a beard and was unemployed, I still fell for him. And what did our stage look like, honey?
Well, I know that one of the things that we used to do is we used to swap cars so that we'd feel closer to each other.
Oh.
That was the plan, but Kim actually got the better end of the deal because I had this beaten-up old bomb that was used to be her car. And the things like, do you remember like talking on the phone? Like, this is when, before mobiles, and it was the old phones, the big black things, you know, with the sort of stuff. And it'd be, okay, let's say goodbye. Okay, you hang up.
You hang up.
No, you hang up. You say goodbye first.
Goodbye.
Now, who hasn't done that?
Goodbye. Right.
Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Crush hasn't done it yet. So are you still... Come on. No, okay, I'm hanging up now.
Now.
You're still there, aren't you?
It's that sort of merging where you just want to spend every waking minute together. You want to tell each other. You see a sunset and you think, oh, it'd be much nicer if he was here or she was there. It's passionate. There's sort of an intensity about it. And in that time, it's almost like you're like this, like you know, staring into each other's eyes, and you people don't exist out there.
The whole world doesn't exist.
No, the world
anymore.
Doesn't exist. It's just us.
It's all about us.
I don't know. No one else has ever felt like this.
No, it's just amazing.
It's amazing.
How can you believe this?
I know, and the similarities. I like caramel amazing. Milkshakes.
So do I.
It's amazing.
And my mother's name's Gwen.
My mother's name's Gwen.
Oh. And she used to work in the AWA building in Sydney.
Yes, my mother worked in the AWA building in Sydney.
It's
what
meant
year?
To be.
That
it's
year.
Same year. They probably shared the elevator together.
They did, and we never knew.
We never knew.
And I went to the Andre Crouch concert in 1978.
So did I.
Oh, where did you sit?
Up the back.
Oh, so did I. Oh. We were probably next to each other.
We were probably sharing the same air.
And we never knew.
We carry that a bit too far, are we? But you know what it's like. You just don't know anybody
else.
Oh, that's
true.
Exists, you know?
We shared the same air. Anyway. You know, there's a lot of hormones running around in that state. There's a lot of hormones running around. It's true. Doctors tell me. I asked one of my doctors, what's happening in that stage, you know, one of my friends. And he said, oh, it's all about, what were they? The
chemicals and hormones. Can you believe it? Like, we just thought it was
us.
Love.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really. It was chemically induced. we're on drugs, right? And it was, there's these drugs called oxytocin and dopamine, if you know those drugs. You could make a million if you could actually sell them in tablet form.
I think some people try to.
Yeah,
but it's running around, it's rampant in your body in that time, and that's what glues you together. And those differences, you don't see any. You just sort of remember all the similarities, and it's a wonderful stage, and we all love that stage. And I might have even been reminding you of that stage, some of the things that you remember.
Distant past.
But it doesn't, and it can't last forever. Now you'd sort of think. Reasonably, why can't this last forever?
Nothing would get done.
Nothing would get done in the whole world, would it? If everyone was doughy-eyed about each other and just forgot about the world and the work and the money that needs to be raised and the schools that need to be built and all the rest of it. So God knows we can't stay in that stage forever. Celebrities don't seem to know that, do they? They go through that honeymoon stage. They've got all the hormones racing around, and then when that starts to fade, what do? Well, dump you, go for another one, because they're addicted to that high. They're addicted to that high, and really they don't get that the next stage is necessary in a relationship. The next stage is going from blending nesting, looking this way, to... and... a little bit of separation called the self-affirming stage. It's almost as though you go through the, we're just too close. It's getting a bit suffocating. I forget what it was like to be me. And there's things that I want to do that I forgot that I used to like doing. And guess what? I don't really want to spend every waking moment with you anymore. Sorry.
It's hard to believe, but it is actually a true thing that I think a lot of couples don't realise these different stages, and so when they get to the self-affirming stage, that can be really scary, because they think, oh, I've fallen out of love. And so it's good to know that this stage is coming where you can actually bring your person who you are and the benefits of who you are and to the marriage relationship, so that when you go from the blending nesting to self-affirming, that you don't go from this to back-to-back, but you actually go side-to-side, and then you have something that you can now have your own path, but together, you're working together in that self-affirming.
So the actual real growth doesn't happen till the honeymoon stage is over, really. The real growth of knowing each other for who you really are and learning to love that person with their differences rather than just all the things that you think you have in common. So it's great to have a honeymoon stage, but it's great when it's over because the real growth starts to begin, the real love and the real friendship. So if you have that high expectations, which I think a lot of those celebrities do, that it'll always feel this way, and then you get this disappointment hit, what are you going to do with that? You have to see it as a positive thing. Okay, now the real loving attachment begins. You go from being blindly in love to really having this loving attachment where you start out and do life together and become real friends. So I'm sure looking at all of us, most of us have lived through that whether we put those words to it or not. We've understood that the honeymoon phase can't live forever. The self-affirming stage is an important part of growth. But should we then expect it never, we never get those feelings again, ever? You know, do they ever come back? Yeah. Have they?
Yeah. Yes, they come back. And you can probably remember some times of yourself when you've remembered it. I think probably having children as babies, probably not when they grow up a bit, but but having children and sharing that experience together, that could be a very bonding time together. Some special holidays together could be good.
Yeah, some of those second honeymoons, you might have gone, oh, yeah, I remember what it was like just to be us. Maybe when you've moved into a new home. So you can have those sorts of feelings come back, but they don't necessarily stay with you every day the way they did in that first stage. You do move on. But what we don't want to happen for all of us is to move on to a stage which is, okay, that's the way it is. What can you expect after 10, 20, 30, 40 years? A marriage that's sort of like stuck in the doldrums, if you know what that means. You've heard what the doldrums really are. You might explain
probably,
that one.
Probably coming back to the old pirate ship sort of stuff, you know, we talked about earlier on. The doldrums were an area around the equator-ish sort of place where the winds from the north and south hemisphere would sort of blend. And what would happen is the ship travellers in the old high, tall-masted ships, and they'd get to somewhere around about the equator and suddenly they'd hit what they called the doldrums where there was just no wind. And the whole sea would be becalmed for sometimes months on end. And the ship would just basically just stop. And very soon they'd run out of food, they'd run out of supplies, and they were actually going mental because there was just nothing to do on this ship. And they weren't going anywhere. So the doldrums have a really bad place. So we don't really think that marriage actually gets in the doldrums, but sometimes you can feel that we're not going anywhere, we're not doing anything, and it's pretty boring, and so we're in the doldrums.
It's kind of a sad picture with no life in your sails, isn't it? But that's what it can feel like. And I'd be surprised if in this room anyone hasn't felt like that at some stage, especially if you've been married a long time. I'm sure there are times where you go, yep, we didn't have life in our sails then. And unfortunately, we get these ideas that we can spice things up just with, you know, 50 exciting date nights book or, you know, 15 different positions for sexual experience or something like that and give that a whirl and pull out another trick. I'm not saying things like that aren't worth having a go at, but they really don't cut it for the day-to-day life of the next stage that we've all been through, which is where life is really, really busy and we just have to make things work on a day-to-day basis. We can't wait for the next trip to Italy or something like that. It's just too far away. It's maybe so far away we can't see it at all. We have to learn to live with the day-to-day and keep our marriages vitalised, because a marriage stuck in the doldrums is what we call a devitalised marriage. It's not going to stay there. It will spiral down further and further. So simple answer. I know it sounds crazy to have simple answers to all these things, but really one of the biggest factors for you having a vitalised marriage is to be able to manage your own personal stress. You need to be someone that's nice to live with. Isn't that simple? You have to be able to manage your life, your tasks, your life stresses in order to be someone who's someone's good to live with, be a happy person to live with. There's two big questions couples ask each other in marriage. One is, are you there for me? Are you there for me? You know, in the times that we've been married, we'd have some really hard times too. But I've always been able to answer a yes to that. Is he there for me? But sometimes that doesn't feel like it. But
deep down, yes, I know he's there for me. But if he's not handling his own stress well, he can't be there for me. He's got nothing left to give to me, and vice versa. So big question, are you there for me? And a second big question is, do I matter to you? Do I matter to you? So I'll let them just sit with you for a little while. Is your husband or wife there for you? And do you matter to them? They're big questions to ask. One of the worst situations I have in the counselling room is when I hear wives and husbands say, they're there for everyone but me. They're there for my children, they get a piece of him or her. Parents, neighbours, school, soccer club, surfing buddies, everybody. But I don't feel they're there for me and I don't feel I matter to them. So they're really big questions we need to ask of ourselves. Each of us needs to go, am I a good person to live with? Do I manage my own stress well? And have I got more to give to my husband and wife? Am I there for him? And is he there for me? Yeah. Anything to add on that one?
Now, I'm just thinking, so if you're sitting out there and you go, I don't handle my own stress very well, then what could you do about that? So that's a self-improvement or self-control sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I guess it depends what sort of couple you are. Scott and I are very high achievement couples, so we tend to pile things on our plates till they're sort of like over our heads, you know. Then we feel the stress, don't we? Mm. And then what do we normally do? Let's get rid of it all. It's just, you know, it's too much, let's get rid of it all, which isn't a good idea. So I guess you've got to be able to say to each other, Your stress levels are getting too high. We can't cope with that. Let's take something off the plate. Something that we need to do less of. Something that's taking too much time away from us and our family.
But I think also it's good for you to understand how you cope with stress. So for some of us, we just retract and go inside ourselves, which isn't helpful to a marriage relationship if you just retract and go into a cave because you're not taking your partner with you. Now, sometimes we have to do that in order to just relax. But after you've been in your cave for a while, then come back and re-engage. Don't just sort of assume that they're still okay. Yeah? Or if you're the sort of person that sort of flares up and explodes and wants to have a big argument, but your partner isn't, then understand that's probably not so helpful either. So That's you. After you've been married for a while, you probably know how you and your partner handle stress, and you can probably have a little tick in your box at the moment and go, yeah, it's probably not really helpful. So how I actually handle stress at the moment, what can we now do to be able to handle that stress together? So, okay, if I go into my cave, I need to do that, but when I come out of my cave, I'm going to re-engage and tell you where I've been. But if you're an explosive type of person, well, then maybe we need to work out what's a scenario to handle that. Get the drift? So to handle that sort of stuff properly.
Yeah, that was a big thing for us because I always felt that if Scott handled his stress by going away from me, that would make me anxious. What's going on for you? Are you okay? Are we okay? So he needed to be able to say.
So you want to keep talking to me all the time while I was trying to go away and cruise off, you know. And I go, leave me alone. But I want to talk to you. So she chased me into my cave, you know. And so then I had to do some drastic things to slam her outside the cave. But where I was failing was I'd go into my cave, but I wouldn't come back and report afterwards. So I could say to her, look, don't chase me in the cave, but I promise after I've calmed down and I've de-stressed, I'll come back and I'll tell you what I've been up to.
Mm.
And that was really helpful for us.
Yeah.
What about the second thing? So one was how you handle the stress and whether you're there for me. And what was the second point?
Do I matter to you?
Do I matter to you? So do I matter to you is really a decision, isn't it? It's not really, oh, I'm a certain personality, so I've got a little escape thing from that. Do I matter to you? And it's also a case of even if you do matter to me, you've got to feel that you matter to me.
Yeah, definitely.
So that means you've actually got to communicate if you do matter to me, do you really believe you matter to me? So I've actually got to communicate to you a way that you understand that you matter to me.
Yeah, and I guess that's, you can only know that if you're shown it, you know. Do I matter to you is a very big question to answer, but you'll see it in lots of little ways. So I just remember one story of when we were, four kids trying to get kids into the cars, a real pain and all the rest of it. And I went down to the garage one day, had the little, they were only little, in car seats, and I noticed that Scotty had moved a car seat over to the correct side of the car so that he could fit in the stroller and the umbrella because it was raining, you know. And I just walked down into the garage and I started crying when I saw that because I went, he's actually thought about me getting out in the rain with the kids, with the stroller, and helped me out there. So in that moment, I felt, yeah, I matter to him. He's actually thought. So it wasn't like he turned up and said, I love you in the morning, didn't even mention it, but he showed it. So those questions, are you there for me and do I matter to you? They're responsibilities of yours to show that to your partner when the honeymoon is over and you're in that very, very busy stage of life. You've got to show it with your actions, I think, more than your words.
And you've got to show it in a way that your partner gets it. You know, you can't be the sort of person, well, I told you I married you when we got married. So I told you I loved you when we got married, so if I change my mind, I'll let you know, you know. So it's, you know, if they're the sort of person who needs to feel like that you're communicating to them, but you're not that way, you've got to actually put yourself in your partner's shoes and say, so it might be a good question you can ask yourselves later when you're at home alone having a cup of tea or something and just look to each other and say, so do you feel that I'm there for you? Do you feel that I matter? And if not, why not? And how can I make that work? Because you do matter to me because we are married. So how can I make it so that you get that better?
So the honeymoon stage doesn't last forever. The self-affirming stage, where you actually start doing other things and going back and doing some of the things that you like, is a good thing. Learning to accept each other's differences and learn to love each other above them is a good thing. And answering those questions, are you there for me and do I matter to you? Handling your own personal stress, those sort of things we've talked about. But I just wanted to end with just three kind of easy words that, because sometimes you go for a talk like this and you can't remember a thing. But these three words are starting with the letters R-E and they will help you get wind back in the sails if you're in the doldrums, okay? So the first one is to remember. Remember your honeymoon stage. Remember your wedding. Remember how it used to be for you. And that's something you've got to actually consciously do. So what are some of the things we try and do to remember? Because it's been a long time now, 34 years coming up. Yep, 35.
35 years coming up. How can she not remember? So some of the things that we do is we just talk to our kids even about how we met each other and how we, you know, our early years of marriage, because they should still be fond memories for you. As we said, you said you loved each other and you loved each other enough to get married. So what were those nice times? You remember those nice times? You can sort of remember back to those times and they sort of make you feel a bit gooey, right? So if you can sort of tell that to your kids and relate the story of how you met each other, even talk about your wedding day and who was there, even getting some of your old videos out, if they still play on the old VHS players and whatever, but getting your old home videos out, something we do is we'll put them on a Saturday morning, for example, while we're all running around doing chores around the house, we'll just put the home movies on the TV. Not to sit and watch them, but while we and the kids are all tearing through the house, you know, you go, oh, I remember that, quick, come and have a look. You know, and it just revives the memories. It helps you to remember.
We've also gone back to try and find some of the old places we used to go to, and we only did that like about 3 years ago. So we said, let's go find the place we had our first kiss. And I had no idea where it was. I mean, I knew it was in a graveyard. That was pretty awesome.
When I kiss her, she doesn't remember anything.
But it was a fun day trying to find it because we were right out in the bush somewhere and we had to act really overgrown sort of thing, you know, so that was fun. So maybe you could go find where you had your first kiss. Maybe you could go back. There was a lot of people sat down who said they hadn't had the second or third honeymoon. Come on. It doesn't have to be expensive. Some of our little celebratory anniversaries were in tents in the rain, weren't they?
T-E-N-T-S, not intense. They were intense, right? And I remember we used to go back to the same place every year for our anniversary, which is really cute. We used to do that. And, of course, as the money got tighter and tighter, the circumstances got worse and worse and worse. And I remember there was one time when Kim was pregnant with our first child, and she was quite heavily pregnant, and we were on an air mattress that kept going down in a caravan park at Shoal Bay, and it was raining, and she had to keep getting up in the night to go to the toilet. And I remember she came back in and flopped on the bed, and it sort of went, I bounced up on the other side, accompanied by it, you know, and she said, this is it. We're not doing this again. It's got to be up from here.
And it has been. So, yeah, remember. Go back and have a, you know, play the game. We have a lovely game called I Have a Memory. You ever played that? We just start out with, okay, I've got a memory. It was, well, let's play it. It's fun. See if you can do it. Oh, no, this is a test.
Oh, dear.
I have a memory. It's on our honeymoon. We were up the north coast. We stayed at a funny little place, but we played a funny game in a swimming pool.
Ah, yes, that was at Taree, and we stayed the night. And it was on our honeymoon. It was our third night, I think. It was our third night on our honeymoon, and we got to this place, and it was rough as. And there was bullet holes in the windows. The air conditioner rattled and we didn't know what else to do because we didn't feel safe in the bedroom with the bullet holes. So I know how to show a woman a good time. And so I can't believe we did this. So we put our swimmers on and we went to the swimming pool and we took our wedding rings off and threw them in the pool and then dived for them.
Sure, yeah. We were pretty young and stupid.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, play I Have a Memory. It's good fun. That was totally unrehearsed. I'm glad you remembered.
So am I.
Okay, the second word. So the first word's remember. The second word is repent. Now, that's a word you might have heard around the church a bit in the big sense of confession and forgiveness, but I'm not talking about that big sort of meaning of repent. I'm just talking about a turnaround. A change of direction. What those sailors were asking for, the wind to come back in the sails and get going again. It's really hard when you see a couple that you really think this is dead and gone. This marriage is over. And some marriages have to be over for various reasons, not for this talk. But I did have a couple recently that I remember thinking, okay, they're coming. It's as dead as I can see. It's dead. We better just work out how we can end this well. So I was kind of very disappointed in that feeling, but that's where it got to after many, many, many sessions. And the lady herself turned up without her husband, so I thought, okay, it's really dead. It's over. Anyway, as the session went on, I said, look, she said, yes, it's over. And I said, well, let's just, are you willing to give it one tiny turnaround, anything little? And the answer was, well, I don't see why it has to be me all the time, which was fair enough. Does it have to be me? And I basically said, well, if it's not you, it's not going to happen. So will you give it one go? And she went, okay, it's going to be big, isn't it? And I went, no, it's actually not. It's going to be very little. Are you willing to give it a go? And she went, okay. And I said, look, all I want you to do for the next week is when you hear the car coming in the door, I want you to pick up the toys and meet your husband at the door. Can you do that? And she went, it's going to be hard, but maybe I can. Pick up the toys, because that was driving him crazy, and meet him at the door. I think they were answering the questions, are you there for me? Do I matter to you? Because he had over and over talked about the frustration of the messy house and the I'm invisible here. And so she tried it. And then the next session, they both came back. And they're still together. And I didn't give it a hope. So I just think, don't give up on just the little things that can make a difference. The repenting, just starting to do something different. Surprise him, surprise her. Make yourself look mysterious again. Because after so many years, they think they know everything about you and you can't come up with anything different, and that's doldrums. Try something different. Remember your first love. Repent. I can't tell you what to do in that part. Who would think picking up toys and meeting someone at the door would change a whole dynamic? But maybe you know. Maybe you know that there's things that you used to do that you've stopped doing, or that your husband or wife's asked you to do and you've gone, nah, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing that. I mean, it might be just a little thing I've started to do for Scotty is buy him olives. I don't like olives, so I've never bought them. It's not a big thing. He likes olives. Maybe I could buy some.
Yeah, it's really good. I like it. And I love eating olives, and just the fact that she buys them, I go, oh, she's thought about me.
Yeah.
Simple, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the chocolates, but, you know.
I'm just feeling for your weight. You know, it's just, her weight control, I mean, you know.
You know, talk about whether the fact that you have never had an anniversary celebration or you haven't had for a long while, and plan one for next year, this year, 2014. You know, maybe it's just that you need to change the way you make love, just light a candle for a change or go somewhere different, something different, repent. And maybe play the game, tell me something I don't know about you. That's a good one, especially if you've been married a long while. Tell me something I don't know about you. See where that takes you. So remember, repent, and the last one is just recast. And I think that just means recasting your vision, actually thinking about the future of your relationship now the honeymoon is over. Most of you are either in the collaboration stage, what I call the collaboration, babies, children, businesses, working, building homes, moving on, all that sort of stuff, and some of you are past that. So you've got to actually go, okay, what does our marriage look like now the kids have left home, or now we're moving to a different suburb or whatever. What can we do different there? Because it really is about just getting vitality back into your marriage. I'd love you to think about that. The honeymoon doesn't last forever. Thank goodness. We do move on. We do face outwards. We have great times doing things together now that we never did when there was four kids in the house. There's still two. In fact, this week, how many have we got?
We've got 20 something at our place.
23. We have the Summerfest at EV at the same week, and we've got a house full. But taking time together, remembering, repenting, and recasting your vision for your marriage. And I pray that those honeymoon feelings do revisit, that you can feel them from time to time, but that you just move on with the expectations of a loving attachment rather than blind love. Thanks for having us.